Anita, how's your mental health?
Questionable at all times, you know this.
Yeah, how's the mental health of your children?
Also a little bit tricky. Can I tell you my experience in trying to find therapists for myself and my kids, Mel?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is how it goes. You ask around your friends and your family for a referral for somebody who's nearby. You finally find somebody who sounds like they might work for your family. You give them a call and you find out that A, they're not accepting new patients, or B, they have a huge wait list. So you start over again and you ask people if they know anybody who would be a good therapist and a good fit. Finally, you find one, you go and you meet with them, and you figure out that you don't actually like them that much. But it's been so much work to find somebody who you can go to in your area that you're kind of stuck with them. Well, do you have any ideas for how to get around this?
I do because guess what? I've actually had some therapists that I have found on my own, which involves what you're saying. Sometimes I remember one time I was like 3 hours in the bathtub on my phone looking through websites. I was such a prune at the end. But I have also had the experience with working with BetterHelp, and it was like I don't want to say too good to be true, but because it is true, but it's like amazing because I was matched with my therapist within 24 hours.
And you didn't have to go through all of that other ridiculous process of trying to find somebody. And here's the cool thing, too, is if that person didn't work out for you, you can just switch and say, and it's not like you're committing to another years long search for somebody who you're going to jive with.
That's true. And I lucked out, or maybe just BetterHelp is really good at matching people together because I never had to change my therapist. I loved her, perfect fit for me. And I know that some of our friends have used BetterHelp and they've had to change therapists, and boom, same day, you can change.
Easy
You can ghost your therapist, get a
peasy.
new one.
I love this idea. BetterHelp is one of our sponsors. If you use our promo code trybetterhelp.com/WWDN, you get 10% off your first month, and we totally recommend it.
Yes, get some therapy. That's
Ha.
trybetterhelp.com/WWDN. Our long lost friend is here. We say her name all the time, all the time.
I was laughing because my daughter did the Patreon shout out last time and she said your name's so not right and it made me laugh so hard. It's like you probably get a lot of interesting pronunciations, do you?
Gaia. I mean, I guess is the. I don't know, Earth goddess,
Yeah, that'd be
Gaia.
cool. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And that's okay. If you want to call me that, that's great.
I'm pretty sure she said Gia. So who are you really? Tell us your name.
I've always pronounced it Gia. My grandfather was Giacomo, Giacomo.
Oh,
So the first name after.
Italian.
Oh, yeah. He's in the record books for the largest still ever found in a home dwelling. That's my claim to
He
fame.
was making some moonshine somewhere in his house. That is amazing. Gia, where are you from?
Well, I'm from the Boston area, but I've
Okay.
been in Colorado since 1999. I am an ER nurse and have been for 32 years, and I was a travel nurse. And I, of course, I did. Kind of, you know, I felt like I did the East Coast because I grew up there. I wanted to ski, and it was January, and the company said, "Hey, how about New Mexico? How about Albuquerque?" And I said, "Well, I said ski, not look at cactus." And she said, "Taos," and I went, "Oh, how
Oh.
far away?" And it was 2 hours away. So my first travel assignment was Albuquerque. That was my first introduction to mountains.
All
I
right.
was from Massachusetts, where, 1,000 feet is a mountain. So it was interesting. And then did the whole West Coast, did San Diego and Oregon and Washington and Napa, and just had a great time. But I kept coming east and would end up in Denver. And then I stayed in Denver for a whole year and a half, working at different hospitals as a traveler. But I was in Denver, and the mountains are 2 hours west of Denver. I think you guys probably know that. And I was having all my shit in my car after working a night shift, driving to the mountains to ski the pow, not knowing anybody up there and driving back to Denver so I could sleep.
Wow.
And totally. I mean, I was young. Don't get me wrong. I was young, but it was ridiculous. I found Vail and then I started working there. And then a friend in Chicago said, I have a flight nurse position. And I know you've always wanted to be a flight nurse. Would you come to Chicago and interview? And I said, I don't want to move again. I don't want to leave. And she said, do you want to be a flight nurse or not? And I said, yes. I went to Chicago and I got the job. And it was the scariest thing I've ever done in my entire career. But I was a flight nurse. I felt like I was God. But it was incredible. Like, there's no doctor on there with you. It's you and your medic making decisions, life and death decisions on a helicopter. It was out of my league and I should have never done it, but I'm so glad I did. And the best part was I met my hubby there.
Was he your patient?
Nope. Thank God.
Yeah. It would have been so great if you would have like saved his life.
And oh, I know.
Picked him up off of a mountain.
We did do that though. But anyway.
Gia, ER nurses, I know, have the best stories. The best. Do you have a lot? I'm sure you're not going to tell them here, but can you tell us later your top three?
I took care of Andre Agassi. Oh, but that's all I can say. That's it.
Awesome.
Okay. Tell us how you met the husband.
All right. So I wasn't having the traveler community out in Chicago and only knew my boss out there. And so I joined a little thing called High Life Adventures. And it wasn't a dating club because that wasn't even in the cards then. This is in 2000. That wasn't even barely a thing. But anyways, they did pub crawls and Cubs games and art glass blowing. They did a tattoo party. They did a bunch of fun stuff. So I joined it. You had to pay a fee. And then literally the second night I was out, I went to some kind of pub crawl thing and I met a bunch of people and I was playing darts and I'm talking and whatever, but I didn't remember this person. But the second night we were out and we were doing this thing called Whirly Ball. I don't know if you've ever, it was so much fun. So you're inside like a basketball court in a bar, in a bumper car with little wiffle ball and like a little lacrosse stick.
This sounds like something drunk people made up.
Basketball. Yes. Oh my God. It was so much fun. Anyway, so I met him there and I said, I'm Gia. He said, I know you're the, I said, you do? He said, yeah, we met before. You're the flying nurse that came here to live her dream. I was like, wow, you remember that? And he's like, yeah, it was quite a story. I'm like, holy shit. Well, we talked and made out in the parking lot till 3 a.m.
Skipped right to the good part.
I mean, I was 36. He was 42, had been divorced, no kids. I had no kids, obviously. I've never been married before. And we talked until 3 in the morning, and he would not come by my house. I thought that was so impressive. He said, no, it's a school night. I got to go to bed. He said, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, I'm going to Vegas with some friends. He's like, well, can I drop you off at the airport? I'm like, no, I am independent. I don't do that shit. I'll call you when I get back. And I got that. Anyways, I told my friends that next day. I said, I think I just met the guy I'm going to marry.
What's his name?
His name is Ted Swetlick.
Ted. Swetlick is a very interesting last name.
Yes.
Swetlick, if you pronounce it like he did. And all I could think of was, God, I hope I don't really like this person. Because I've never been married, and that is not the last name I wanted.
one of the heads of the Olympic, the IOC committee for Salt Lake 2002, his last name, Jocklick.
Oh no.
Do they at least pronounce it different?
Nope.
Oh.
And I think there was a scandal, so it was all over the news.
Jocklick.
So you met a man named Swetlick.
I met a man named Swetlick. I told my friends I was going to marry him. And then we talked about it. Like, we got into the I love yous immediately. You know what the first thing, one of the things we talked about that very first night was, how much credit card debt do you have?
That's so responsible.
Valid.
Crazy?
Yeah, that's a 36 and a 42-year-old. That's not like a 20 and a 24-year-old.
Both of us said neither. And I'm like, none. I'm like, wow. Oh, okay. All right. And I didn't think he was bullshitting me. So anyways, months go by. We start I love yous very quickly. And then I decide I am not staying in Chicago. I need to go back to Vail. And so I said, I was afraid I was going to lose him when I said it, but I said, literally, I have to go back to Colorado. Would you come with me? And he said, I don't know. Show it to me. I'm like, ooh, good words. That's big. Okay, great. I planned a trip in September, right? What better month is there?
Yeah.
September. It's 80 degrees and 55 at night and the leaves. And I got us a cabin at the Naked Hot Springs in Strawberry Park.
Naked Hot Springs.
Hot spring. Well, it's naked after dark. Like, it's like a old fashioned like hot spring.
You were at a naked hot springs with someone named Sweatlick. That's all I want to say.
Sometimes we assume that unless we had a huge life insurance payout, we don't really need to know anything about investments or even finances. But guess what? A little knowledge of finances is critical for all of us. Maybe your partner was in charge of that stuff, and now you find yourself making all the decisions. Maybe you're mad about that. Maybe I am. Nicole from the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast is here to help. She tackles financial literacy by telling the stories of women and widows and finance experts and shares the lessons they've learned as certified financial planners. Whether you know a lot and feel confident in your financial decisions or feel unsure about all of that stuff, there is more to learn. Listen and subscribe to the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast on all podcast platforms. This ad was paid for by Rockhouse Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
It was too cold to be sweaty, I can tell you that.
All right.
But and all he could say in Colorado was, oh my God, how did you leave this place?
And go to Chicago.
Wow. Yes, I got him.
I mean, Chicago's fine. I'm sorry.
It's fine, but yeah. And then I said, but I want you to show it to me in the winter. I said, but you don't ski. He said, but you'll teach me. And I said, okay, I'll teach you to ski. You teach me to golf. And he turned out to be a much better skier than I was a golfer, but I still golf and I still think of him every day. Anyways, had a great 11-year run. Beautiful. We had a perfect little condo. It was just right up on a bike path. It was just a great spot. Turns out it's really good. It was on the first floor. Literally an 1,100 square foot, two bedroom, two bath condo in Avon, like at the bottom of Beaver Creek. I don't know if you've ever been there.
I did a race there once, twice.
Yes, I know you talked about it. Yes. We always did this golf outing that was this firefighters championship, whatever. It's just a drunken golf outing. Literally, they have kegs at different holes and whatever. And we got a ride home and we just had the greatest time. And when we got home, the people that we had been golfing with said, hey, how about we're coming from Eagle Vale, which is east, you know, a mile east of us. How about if we come and pick you up on the bike path, you get on your bikes and you come meet us at a restaurant, literally a total of 3 miles on that bike path. And it's bike path that's off the road. And I mean, we had so much fun. Ted was riding with his pants around his knees on his bike, like mooning Highway 6. Like, we just had a fun time. And I mean, we were feeling good, but we weren't drunk, stupid, nothing. Like, we were just, it was a beautiful summer day, whatever. Get to one of the bars, had a beer there, get to another one, had a beer, and then we had some food. And we go to leave the place, and there's a bike path that leaves the parking lot that connects to the bike path along the river. when we were looking, there were six of us, and we're all from the hospital, CAT scan, x-ray, nurses, a bunch of us. Ted did admissions at the hospital for 7 years, working night shift with me. So we were well known to the community. Anyways, there was a car parked on the bike path, not a parking spot, but a parking spot next to it, but a car was parked along the bike path. The first two people that went through, the first girl was like, "Hey, bike path, you just got to hug the front fender of the driver's side and you'll see the bike path." So she did that. The next girl did that. Then Ted did that. Then my friend Jason, who's CAT scan, then me. And we're all like, it's 9 o'clock at night. We've got headlamps on. We don't have helmets on because we're on a bike path, but I don't think that would have helped him anyways, but we still don't know what happened. All of a sudden I heard Jason scream Ted and then him scream Gia. When he screamed Gia, I was too busy looking at where I was going to even look. But when I rounded the little stopped and around the corner, Ted was on his back. His eyes were open. Jason was at his side. Ted's head was bleeding. And I looked down and said, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" Because his eyes were open. And he's not answering, and his color is getting duskier. And I said, "I don't see him breathing." And I put my hands up to his neck. "I don't feel a pulse. Jason, do you feel a pulse?" Now, we're all trained in CPR. "Jason, do you feel a pulse?" He said, "I don't feel a pulse." I said, "I'm starting CPR. Call 911. And I start, and Jason starts, I start compressions. Like, this is what I do every day, right? Not every day, but it's just ingrained. So Jason, I do 15, Jason does two breaths, and our friends are calling 911. And then Jason gets up from his knees, and I'm still doing CPR. Like, I'm not looking away. I'm not doing anything different than what I'm doing. And I hear Jason throwing up. I'm like,
"Oh, wow." It's because he does CT scans.
"What are you doing?" He said, "He just puked in my mouth. I'm sorry." And then his buddy, Eddie, who also works x-ray, jumped in. And Eddie ran it for me like a CPR class, counting for me until the ambulance got there. The ambulance got there. It was 6 minutes that felt like 6 hours. But ambulance got there. They kind of pushed me away. That's when my friends took me and just put my back to Ted. Because I told him he doesn't have a pulse. We're doing CPR. And I didn't even get to see what they were doing, but they said, finally they were done. They said, "They have him in the ambulance. Let's go." So we left the bikes. Somebody said they'd take care of him. Who cares? But they put me in the ambulance with Ted in the back, with the two medics in the back. So there are two medics in the back. Everybody knew us. The supervisor is with us driving the ambulance at this point. And I just remember, like, they were quiet in the back. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Why is it so quiet?" And they said, "Oh, gee, you know, we're okay. We're just getting a line. And we don't have to do CPR anymore. And he's got a pulse, but he is intubated with the breathing tube in." I'm like, okay. And I looked, as we're driving away, and I looked at the supervisor of the ambi service and said, "What the F just happened? How did my husband just have a heart attack off his bike?" And he looked at me and he said, "High spinal cord injury." And I went, oh, that never occurred to me. Christopher Reeve's injury, C2-3, really high up in your neck. It shuts off your diaphragm. When I ever heard of that, like, it's shuts off your diaphragm. You can't, your diaphragm, like, how we breathe is our diaphragm contracts and our lungs fill. Well, in the diaphragm, it's a nerve. When you just don't have that, you don't have a breathing reflex anymore. So hence, and that's the low heart rate. Like, as I look at it as a nurse now, low blood pressure, low heart rate, and no ventilations. How did I know? But it haunted me. It haunted Jason for a long time that we did CPR. And this is what we brought back. But Ted never. I thought at some point he would be mad. I would have been mad, I think, that someone brought me back from that.
Nobody saw him crash, or did somebody see him crash? Did Jason see him crash?
No, no, we were all looking at around the, we were so tight on the tile of that car that nobody saw him crash. But what we think happened is his head went down. There's a bunch of boulders off the side of that. And we think his head went down and his body just flipped back. He ripped his vertebral arteries completely. Those are two arteries that go up to your spine. He ripped them completely. So we got to the ER. It is my staff. It is my doctors, my nurses. I work there. Everybody there is hushed and silent because they knew it was us. I'm looking at one of my best friends, and she is curled in a corner, squatted down, just bawling. She can't even help us. She's just too upset. Ted's starting to wake up at this point, and he's thrashing his head, and I'm holding that C collar on tight. His head's bleeding all over because he's got a maceration at the top, but I'm holding the C collar. I'm like, Ted, just calm down. Anyways, we gave him a lot of drugs and got him to CAT scan. It never registered with me that he wasn't moving arms and legs. Never even registered. Again, I'm not thinking like a nurse, right? I'm holding his head thinking, don't break your neck. No, you already did that. it was rough. It was rough for everybody in that hospital. Then, so it wasn't the broken neck. His cord was intact, but there was a bruise at a natural a narrowing. They called it a stenosis between 2 and 3 that he was probably born with. But there was a bruise between that. In the cord, there was blood. And I didn't know any of this, but they said, so because he ripped his arteries going up to his brain, we have to put him on blood thinners. Otherwise he's going to have a stroke. Like, oh, okay. Well, what does a blood thinner do to a bruise? Makes it bigger.
Worse.
Yeah. So, we ended up getting to Denver at a really good trauma hospital, Denver Health. I had worked there in the past. I still knew people there, thank God. And we got to Denver Health. A friend drove me down there. Ted had to take a helicopter down because they just needed him to get there quicker. So they didn't do an MRI until the next day at Denver Health. But it was just incredible, the support that I was getting already. Like, somebody that had worked that night drove me to Denver. Like, that's not a quick little jaunt. That's a 2 hours down, 2 hours back kind of thing. But it was midnight. Anyways, I got to the ICU and got everybody knowing what was going on. And it was, I didn't call anybody yet because I didn't know what was going on until the MRI results the next morning. We ended up doing the MRI, and the neurosurgeon took me aside and said, here's his spine. Here's the blood in between. This is an unrecoverable injury. Spinal cords don't like blood. They form scar tissue. Scar tissue, it doesn't. Unrecoverable injury is what I heard from day one. I never told Ted that. I mean, ICU nurses are a different breed, right? They just, nurses are. You just deal with what you got. So immediately, they started, they, within 48 hours of him being there, they put in a trach in his neck. So a breathing tube in his neck. Because it's cleaner. A mouth has a lot of bacteria. And if you're leaving the tube in and suctioning in and out, you can get a lot of bacteria in the lungs. So they immediately put the tube in through the hole in his neck, which was, that was so hard for me because I just thought, this is like, this is really hard because I know this is permanent. And then they put the feeding tube in at the same time because he can't swallow. Yeah. So then they pegged and trached on the same friggin' day. Within 2 days of being there. And all the nurses said, this is the best for the best, Gia. This is for the best.
It's so wild how life can change in such a short instance, you know. And for Mel and I, life changed in an instance, but it was like done and over, right? Like they were dead and gone. And your life changed in an instance, but it was like a different kind of change, because this is a long-term thing you're going to have to be dealing with. And he's not just gone. He's still there to have feelings and emotions, and you need to take care of him, and you've got your own feelings and emotions. And it's just like, that's a whole about face on everything about your life. Like everything that was you guys is now different.
Yeah. How long was he in this state?
He was starting to wake up. I kept begging the ICU nurses for more Ativan because he was trying to talk to me.
Yeah.
His hole was in his neck and he couldn't talk to me, and he's trying to mouth words. Do you have any friggin' idea how hard mouth reading is? Like lip
yes.
reading is? So hard.
It's so frustrating too, because they're desperate to tell you something that they really need to tell you, and you're just like, I got nothing.
I mean, because he was, I didn't even know how concussed he was if he knew what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if he was asking me what happened or why does my neck hurt.
Or if he was like gorked out and being like, can we have cannolis? You know,
yeah.
Something really stupid.
I had no idea. And I was just like, please medicate him or medicate me. Someone needs to get medicated.
Yeah, in this.
I mean, I need medication right now too, because your story, so many of the pieces, I mean, for those who have listened, you know how my dad died. And it's like same thing, C2, C3.
Oh,
and I kept thinking, Dad, don't wake up. Don't wake up, because, well, you want him to wake up, but then you don't. And so
you're
living what my mom would have experienced if my dad had lived and we didn't take him off the life support.
Yeah, the alternate reality.
I'm like listening a lot and not saying a lot because I'm feeling all the feelings again. But like also what happened and like how do you manage it? You're living the worst, the shock and then a caretaking.
Can we back up just a second? Did you guys get married? Or
we did.
Partners?
We did. We got married at First Bank.
And you did not become Gia Swetlick.
No, I did not. I told him it was because of all my nursing licenses. Mm. It was going to be way too confusing.
He should have taken your name.
I said that. I offered that.
That'd be cool.
But we did get married in Rhode Island.
Okay. We skipped that part. So
it's like, yeah, we went from happy to unhappy. But we did have happy.
What year was this accident? When did that take place?
The accident was 2016.
Okay.
We got married in 2005.
Okay. So you'd been married like a good long while. Yeah.
We have. Like I said, we had a great 11 years.
Okay.
Like a beautiful 11. So I had that. But so now we're in the ICU and they want PT to come in. So they bring a wheelchair in the room. And they try and get him out of bed, and I'm sure you know nothing about this, and nobody ever should, but getting someone that has neurogenic shock, which is what happened to his cord, out of laying down to sitting up, their blood, you know, you and I's blood pressure drops a little bit going up. Well, they can't even adjust. So he was on these medicines called pressors, meaning keeping his blood pressure up. Because when you go, so anyways, it took days to go from laying to sitting for where they could use a lift to try and get him up and in the wheelchair. And I still don't even know if he knows what's going on. I'm waiting for him to ask me, am I going to walk again? But I can't read that off his lips. And what do I say? But I don't even know what to say. Like at this point, his family knows, our friends know. I've moved into Denver. Thank God I had a friend there. And I'm just at the hospital every single morning, listening to the doctors, finally somebody gave me some scrubs from the ICU, because I guess my capris were just covered in the blood that I was kneeling on when I gave him CPR. I didn't know that. Who knew? Was I looking at me? No. But I was walking around the hospital covered in his blood, and finally somebody said, can somebody please get her some scrubs? I'm like, for what? And I looked down, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, no wonder I was scaring everybody.
So Gia, you're talking my language, you know, because I'm the physical therapist that gets you up out of bed. I don't use that anymore. But I also know that very often, almost always, somebody who's experienced an injury like this, they go to a rehab unit and then they send them home much before anybody is ready for that to happen. So did that happen to you guys? They said, oh, yeah, he's doing great. Bye. Good luck. And you're like, what? Excuse me?
Yeah. They sent us to literally we were in there 14 days and already my friends who were physical. Anyways, doctors in the hospital helped me get him to the rehab center in Denver, which is called Craig Rehab. And it is where Christopher Reeve went to try and get off his ventilator. It is one of the most successful get off ventilator programs in the country. And they have literally two sides to it. One is the TBI side, the brain injury side, and the other is the spinal cord injury side, or that's how it used to be. But we were there in 14 days in rehab already at Craig Hospital, just rehab. From day one, they were teaching me and teaching him. At this point, Ted and I had used a little spell chart. Like I would look at a letter and he would say yes or no. And then we would spell each word. Like I knew he was with it. I said, Ted, I don't know what's going to happen. But the minute he got to Craig Hospital, he asked them, the best part, leaving ICU, he made me put his thumb up and walk next to
him. At least it wasn't this one.
No, it wasn't that one. he just said, tell them I'll come back when I'm walking. Like he was that hopeful, just beautiful. Anyways, we get to Craig and he said, well, am I ever going to walk again? And they said, you know, Ted, everybody, this is all they ever said. And I give them so much credit. We don't know. Everybody is different, Ted. Everybody is different. Some things come back, some things don't. And you won't know for 2 years. Yeah. That's how they get you out the door. So it's a completely different way to talk. So he saw physical and speech. And I mean, we saw every specialist possible. But the speech therapist was, she was beautiful. And when she said, okay, Ted, what are your first words to your wife? And he said, I'm sorry I did this to you. So he knew. And then when we could talk, he said, do you really think we can do this at home? Like they're saying we can. I'm like, Ted, I don't know. Our place is on a first floor. We wouldn't have to do much. I had a great friend come down. He looked at our room in the rehab. What would you want in your house? Because within 1 month of being there, when I'm still like, they said, we have to have a family meeting. I said, I'm sorry, what? They said, a family meeting to talk about where you're going from here. I mean, I have friends going, are you going back to the East Coast? Are you going to take them back to Chicago? What are you going to do with them? I've said, you think people on the East Coast are going to help me? Like, this is my older family. Like, they're not capable of helping me through this. And then I leave my job. All the people that are donating all their PTO so I literally had 12 weeks that I did not have to work because everyone in that hospital donated their PTO to me. Like, it was mind blowing what this community did for us. Like, wow. Anyway, so a friend comes down, he sees our house, he comes back with plans for our house. All we have to do is open the door to the bedroom and get the bed out of there and hospital bed and ventilator cart and suction cart and and then I had a little twin bed on wheels. Anyways, the questions at the rehab were interesting. And even his sister asking me, are you going to leave him? Are you going to leave him? Well, evidently, some people can't do it, so they walk out the door. Holy shit. Wow. I didn't really understand how many pieces of me I was going to give him. Like, it was crazy. But at this point, at least, he was eating. and he was drinking, and I did really great CPR because that man did not lose one brain cell. Not one. I broke a lot of ribs, but not one brain cell. So he came out the exact person he went in, as sarcastic, and what an amazing person. So after we got back home and we're kind of settling into, I still wasn't working yet. But I still had to hire staff. I had to train staff because I just got trained in stuff I've never known. I've been a nurse for 30 years, stuff I've never known. The first time I did Ted's care to get him out of bed, it took me 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Holy cow. Can you imagine what this would have been like if you were just a normal citizen?
I think it might have been easier because I wouldn't have been kicked so much. Like, what was important? Like, I stared at every piece of his skin from day one because I know red sores on his heel means there's a pressure sore under there. And if there's a pressure sore, it's only going to come out and get worse. And then he's not going to be able to be on that. So now I got to build something new for his foot or his hands or his elbows or his pieces are falling off his friggin' wheelchairs left, right, and center. I'm like, oh my God, what is this? I mean, I don't even know what to do anymore. It was so insane. And I'm still trying to work and I'm still trying to keep staff. We had some crazy bad thing that happened in the ER. And they had a counselor in there. And my boss said, Gia, why don't you go in and talk to her? Like, why don't you see, you know, if she has any help for you? I'm like, I'll go there, but I can't imagine. Okay, I'm at work. You know, I'm going to come back out crying. She's like, it's okay. We're here for you. These people were my rock. But that poor counselor was crying, was like, oh my God, you do what?
And I love that.
Oh my God. There is no one that can help you? I said, no, there's no one that, I can't even walk my dog. I can't even, like, there is no one to, he can't be left alone.
So like, that counselor was brought in to deal with a stressful situation in work and you walk in and you're like, I don't even care about that. Like, who cares? Like, let me tell you about my life. And then she's like, okay, that was not what I anticipated. And holy crap.
My hand.
Yeah. So Gia, I have a couple questions for you.
Yes.
You said that you did good CPR and so he had all of his brain cells. Well, a lot of people would not want to be alive in those circumstances. And you said that he never was grumpy or upset about you saving his life, which, I mean, you didn't know what was going on. So you're going to save his life. You didn't know what the outcome was going to be. At what point in time did you start to have conversations about, you know, because somebody who has a high spinal cord injury, they have a lot of complications. You mentioned bed sores. That's a big complication. That's like Christopher Reeve, like, died was because of a bed sore. Yeah. And then, you know, you've got lung issues. There had to be some point in time where you guys had the conversation about, like, how hard do we try to keep you in this state? And when do we not try to keep you in this state? Because obviously you're here on this podcast because it was not a situation that could last forever. So can you tell us a little bit about that conversation that maybe you had or didn't have?
Never had that conversation.
Never?
Never. Because you have the conversations of, Ted, if I'm in a wheelchair, do not. I don't want to live like that. You know, you have those conversations, but half of CPR is taken care of because that's his airway.
Mm-hmm.
What we did decide on from the beginning is you're a DNR, Ted. When we bring you home, because it's impossible to do CPR on your wheelchair. Okay, so you're a DNR as heart goes. But he was 50 years old when this happened.
Mm-hmm.
He was 55 when it happened. So he never had a heart problem, but that's not going to be his issue. If I do everything correctly, it's not going to be an issue, right? How much Lasix does he need? How much is that too much urine? How much did you take in today? Fill in his water bottle, looking at the urine.
But you could do everything right. You could do everything perfectly. And it still is not going to be the outcome you want because it's just you're living in a body that is not working as it should be working. Did you guys talk about whether or not he would go back to using a feeding tube or whether or not he would have antibiotics if he got pneumonia.
We never even went there. I just assumed because, again, he was 100% with it.
Yeah.
This man was not like, I don't know. What do you, I don't, you know, I mean, he was 100%. He said, I don't know. I'm going to leave that up to you.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was really good. And he said, Gia, I trust you. And I said, the deal that we made when we left the hospital is, Ted, I will do this for as long as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long that will be. This is a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. I mean, not only am I ordering all his supplies and making sure that we're well stocked. Oh, that's out of stock now. So now we got to switch to this. Is that a red spot on his heel? What's on his butt? And we ended up having a caregiver book of suction blood today, stool, red blood out of rectum today, blah, blah, blah. He had a colostomy finally, because the bowel program is disgusting and you don't ever want a part of that. I found the first group that you never want to be a part of. Wives and girlfriends of spinal cord injury survivors. They kept me alive. That people can do this. And this is what this looks like. And this is the new product I got from here. And this is the best thing for this. And they saved my sanity. Not to mention everyone that I worked with, like that whole hospital kept me supported and alive. I mean, sure, Ted lasted 5 years.
That's so much time.
Wow.
It's like an eternity, but not.
Yeah. And I did as much as I could. And, but that whole community, like we had fundraisers, we had a golf tournament that I hit the first ball on. Like it was just a beautiful, incredible community. But, you know, towards the end, it's like a death. People kind of, I don't want to say forget you, but you're not on anybody's list anymore of, oh, I should go see, because it's hard to go see. Mm-hmm. Not that we were Debbie Downers. We tried to be fun, and we went out to as much as we could, but he couldn't get a breeze on him because it hurt. It hurt what he could feel. It hurt. He said it used to feel like sandpaper on a sunburn. When a breeze hit what he could feel, it was overly sensitive. So neck, chest, if he went out of the house, he had a towel draped over his head with his hood already up.
Like a babushka.
Across his chest, he couldn't get a drop of air on him. The worst thing in the whole wide world, I couldn't hug him. Mm. First of all, of course he couldn't hug me, but it hurt him for me to hug him. So for 5 years, I touched that body, but couldn't really touch that body. It was incredible, incredible to be a part of. But in 5 years, that man never once said, why me?
Did you say that ever?
No, because I tried to be hopeful for him. He was extremely religious. I mean, extremely religious. He was upset because when he got divorced the first time, that he could never get Body of Christ again, the Eucharist, as Catholics do, because he was divorced and he didn't pay them the fee that they wanted to annul his divorce. His divorce fee.
Wait, I didn't know that you had to pay a fee.
Oh, yeah. To be annulled. Even if you have kids, you can have that annulled so you can get the body of Christ again put in your mouth if you've been a good Catholic.
Wait, how much does it cost?
$14.99.
He was too cheap to do it with that last name of Catholic.
That's so funny. I want to Google it.
I was more frugal than him, more say. But interesting. So when his sister came to visit, the one who said, are you going to leave him? At least she hooked him up with a priest, who he had to swear to the priest that we were not having bodily relations anymore so that he could get the body of Christ.
It's $1,000.
$1,000?
We didn't have to pay him anything. No, we didn't have to pay him anything, but he had to agree to that so he could have. So every Sunday we had, he called them the Holy Rollers, came in. And they would do a little mass and give him the body of Christ. And he really enjoyed that. Whatever, but it kept him alive. And I think that belief and hope kept him alive and positive. Now, I don't, trust me, there were days where both of I was bawling, putting him in bed, or he was crying and screaming. He would scream and say, I don't want to live like this anymore. Just effing kill me. Just effing kill me. And I would wake up the next day and go, do you remember what you said? And he would say, yeah, I was just upset. I didn't mean that. Even before this, my best friend died. My mother died. Oh. So in between, so my dad died in 2015 of cancer. Ted's accident was 2016. My mom died in 2017. And she was absolutely my best friend. And I couldn't go back for any of her services because who was going to take care of Ted?
Ted.
Mm-hmm. Best friend. Like I got the phone call when I was taking care of him and I started bawling and I sat on the floor and Ted laying in his bed just said, take all the time you need. Just stay there. And he couldn't hug me. He couldn't fucking hug me. I can't imagine who was crying more at that point. And then the dog died. Best dog in the whole wide world.
You're the worst country song I've ever heard.
Oh, you know I am. Best dog in the world. I haven't even replaced her yet because she was the best dog in the world. And she was my sanity. COVID starts. Well, we start seeing everybody dying and Ted's already on a ventilator. So here's where the hard talks come in. I said, he said, I don't want to go in a hospital ever if you can't be with me. I said, okay, then you are no hospitalization. He said, yes. I said, well, what about these antibiotics, Ted? Like you are now, you can't, like it's every 2 weeks now, Ted, you're on something. Why are we doing those? Why are we? He said, so you don't think I should be on antibiotics anymore? I said, Ted, we're putting a Band-Aid on a cut that will never, ever stop bleeding. I said, I don't know. What do you think? And he said, well, I don't know. What do you think? What do you think? Like, he's putting it back on me. And I said, I don't think you want to know what I think, Ted. And he said, I do. Like, we never talked about this because he's a guy. And he would never friggin' say these words. So I said, I'm so scared to tell you this, Ted, but I'm toast. I have given you everything that I have. I would stay up nights. I started looking through some of my journal entries, like what's going to be left of me? I'm a shell. I'm gone. The person I was is gone. I don't know. Like, Ted, I don't think I have anything left to give you. And if you want to continue this life, I think we need to find a nursing home for you because I can't, I just have nothing left. It was the hardest friggin' words I've ever said to someone I loved. The only thing he said was, okay, then. But I said, you're gonna, like, you will drown with COVID, Ted. You will just drown. I will not be able to suction you enough. And I don't want to see you drowned. So I called his doctor and said, I need morphine and Ativan at the ready, because if and when he gets it, his caregivers, he's told them not to wear masks. I asked everybody, just walk in and wash your hands and be mindful. And that's it. We weren't going to be crazy like an ICU. We didn't have that. I mean, so we ended up talking about the what ifs. And then Ted brought it to the, well, we have the meds. Maybe we should use them. I said, you're obviously, you have pneumonia right now, Ted. So we can wait and see how bad this gets. You're not going to a hospital. You said no more antibiotics. Like, I don't know where you want me to go with this. And he said, I'm just going to trust you to do what needs to be done. Like we, he said, how about next Thursday? So we ended up contacting a hospice person who said, well, he's not a end of life candidate, a death with dignity candidate, because he's not terminal. So she said, how many drugs do you have? How much? And I said, well, she gave me 300 of morphine and 30 of Ativan. And I thought that would be enough. Ted's not a drug addict, you know, but he was about 300 pounds by the time he died because he could eat and drink. So I ended up giving him with her. She was there with me because I said, I don't want to be the one that turns off his ventilator. And she said, oh, no, we're okay with that. I promise. You know, that won't happen. Well, I gave him all the drugs and he was still, when I would take him off the vent, he was still trying to breathe. How was he trying to breathe? He didn't have a diaphragm. I have no idea where, how, what. So the hospice doc looked at me and said, wow, maybe we need to take him to the ER. And I said, for what? And she said, well, because we need an IV. We need more meds. And then she's asking the friend that's with me, maybe she can go to Boulder and she can get the death with dignity drugs for him in the morning when he wakes up. Like, you just said he wasn't a candidate for those. Now you want to bring him to an ER. And like, he can't. Anyways, I said, just go. We don't need you here anymore. So me and a very, very good friend opened a bottle of wine, because that's what you do, and started talking. And she said, Gia, you know, he doesn't want to live like this. You know this. If he had told me, it might have been a lot easier if we had talked about these circumstances. Or I did tell him one time, I almost didn't suction him. And what did he think about that? And he said, it would have been okay. So we did a little talking. Anyways, I started medicating him at about 2 o'clock. By 4 o'clock, Renee helped me get him in bed. The doctor left at 7 o'clock. He was sleeping very peacefully. And she made me turn off his ventilator.
Oof. That's such a lot, Gia. This is a lot to have gone through. And to, yeah.
Mm. It was such a mind-blowing experience in living with him, watching him through this, watching me through this. And no, you can do anything. You can friggin' do anything. But at what detriment? Like, at what detriment to have nothing left? So, and then not to ever, it pissed me off just a little bit because he never said, I hope you have a happy life after this. I hope you find love or something. Or he never would go there with me. Never. It was wild to go through the tops and the bottoms. And
what year did he die?
2020.
Okay. So yeah. It's been a few years. Tell us what life is now like for Gia.
Well, it took over a good year for me to pull my head up above the soil and look around and go, wow, all right, I'm still here. Okay, nobody's here that I love. Mom's gone, dad's gone, the dog's gone, the husband's gone. Wow, who am I? What do I like? What do I want? What do I... Well, like, it was, and it's been a journey, and I started doing some traveling, and I realized that I miss my ocean. How the hell I've been in Colorado for 20 years, I don't understand. And I just bought a tiny, tiny, tiny little place, 0.3 miles from the beach in Rhode Island.
Are you there right now?
Yes. But, I mean, it is 275 square feet of literally the most beautiful little happy place. I just finished painting it. I literally just got here a week ago.
Oh, I love that.
I am learning to sail. I learned to sail last summer because I love the water and realized that's where I want to be. And now I'm about to help someone crew their boat from St. Thomas to Nantucket this summer.
Whoa, that's so cool.
In a month, yeah. So life is there. It's sometimes hard to find again. Yeah. But I'm so glad that I'm still in me because I really thought I lost me.
I want to ask you a question that sometimes we ask some of our guests. If you could offer some advice to people who are right now in your position that you were before or at the beginning of your widowhood journey, yeah. I guess. Some people hate that word. Sorry. It's whatever. What would it be? From where you are now, knowing that time period, what would you say to them?
Know that you won't be there forever. You will come up and you will be a different person, but you just keep looking around. There is beauty and there is love and there is joy. And you just got to have your eyes open to see it. Mm-hmm. It's not right now. It won't be for a while. It took me 3 years to be able to look around and go, wow. Yeah, I'm still here. And what do I love? And I'm following through with dreams. And I'm so happy. I'm not happy he's dead. Of course not. Yeah. I did not bring him with me to this place. So I still have my place in Colorado. I work during the winter season when the mountains open as an ER nurse. And then I have 7 months off at 60% of pay. So I'm not retired. I'm still getting 100% benefits and I'm still getting 60% pay.
All right.
In a different location and have life open to me now. It's really wild.
Gia, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. I loved that you said that we can survive anything. I mean, I think a lot of us feel, at least at some point, like, I can't do this. This is not survivable. And not only did you survive the death of your husband, but you survived taking care of him in a very full way. I mean, not just a little piece of that, but all of his care. So thank you so much for sharing that. I think other people who have been in that circumstance will really relate to that. Mel has an important question to ask you.
I do. Gia, what is your favorite cheese?
I wish I remembered the name of it.
Oh, no.
Incredibly creamy brie with like a garlic and herb on the top of it. That is the most, I wish I knew the name of it, but I can't find it anymore. I'm so sad.
Okay. So we're going to put you down as unknown delicious brie.
Unknown brie.
That's great. Thank you so much, Gia. If you guys have enjoyed this episode or if the podcast is helpful, will you consider joining our Patreon? It's patreon.com/WWDN.
If you'd like to buy us tacos, go to buymeacoffee.com/widowwedonow.
And as always, a nice rating and review is appreciated on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until we get to talk to you again, I'm Anita.
I'm Mel.
And I'm Gia.
We're just two young widows and one free-spirited traveling, skiing, sailing
nurse.
And we're all just trying to figure out widow.
We
do
now. This is my favorite thing to discuss with you.
Tell me, what is it?
One of my favorite things. I do enjoy tacos and cheese and dogs. This is about how you cannot pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a phone plan, especially when you're a widow, your person is dead, you might have kids, you might need another option, and you just want your phone to work. You want unlimited texting and service, and you want it to be like $25 a month.
It blows my mind that they have plans that start at $15 a month. That is so cheap. And the cool thing is it uses other 5G networks, and so you don't have to pay extra for that, and you still get great service.
Yep. Anita and I have traveled all over, and I have used my phone. So I highly recommend it. And my mom's even on it. When my dad died, we put his phone down to the cheapest plan, which is $15 a month. And I think my mom's on the $20 a month plan, and it's so worth it. It's so much cheaper than what we were all paying before. So I highly recommend it if you're on a budget or not. Who cares? Ryan Reynolds is in charge of the company, and they send you free stickers with Ryan Reynolds temporary tattoos. It's kind of the best. So if somebody wants to sign up, what can they do, Anita?
Go to trymintmobile.com/WWDN. Seriously, you guys, such a great idea. Save yourself some money.
And if you're worried about losing data or having any changes with your phone, not going to happen. They walk you through it. Everything's fine. It's the easiest process of all time. Again, that's
trymintmobile.com/WWDN.